Welcome to WST, your West Coast source for sports. I'm your host, Kyle.
This is Big Ben. Knicks fans, get off the subway tracks. The NBA draft lottery is over, and you didn't win.
No, you lost. But you know what? Mediocre is the new tanking.
Wow. And if you head to a bodega and you have a chance to grease the attendant there, make sure you do so. Scratchers come off so much better that way.
We'll give you tips on the NBA lottery, the regular lottery. If you don't know what a bodega is, it's a step up from an AM/PM, a step down from a 7-Eleven corner market.
But make sure you play those random numbers on pick six. Big winners. We're talking big NBA draft lottery, WST Sports, Big Ben and K-Win.
Yeah, so I read a little bit. So this guy, Tom Ziller from SB Nation, broke it down the best. He said, tanking is out, being mediocre is in.
I mean, that's...
if you look at it, like New Orleans got the one, Memphis got the two, and the Lakers got the number four. New Orleans and Memphis were tied for the seventh worst record, and they jumped up to 1 and 2. The Lakers were the 11th worst, and they got moved to four. So what they're saying is you need to go for the playoffs. And then once you know you're out of the playoffs, just be mediocre and lose. Because they got rewarded.
So what is it? Do you think you see a fluctuation then? Like second half of the season, you just see teams like, you know, not playing their stars, obviously, tanking.
I think the way that they wanted to do it is you can't just lose and think you're going to win. So. Right. I guess with the new system, they take the ping pong balls that would go to the worst records and they redistribute them and they give more to the mediocre teams. Because if you look at the Cavs, the Suns, and the Knicks were the worst teams in the NBA. I don't know in which order. And the Knicks ended up getting the third pick. The Cavs got the fifth and the Suns got the sixth. They weren't rewarded for tanking. They're out of the Zion sweepstakes.
Do you think it's like, so I was watching Around the Horn, and do you watch Around the Horn?
Oh, I love Around the Horn.
So Jackie McMullen, but she put it best. When did it, like, RJ Barrett become like a, you know, bag of potatoes? Like, if you're the Knicks, you're getting, this guy was, some say he's possibly better than Zion.
Yeah.
He's just not as flashy.
Yeah, coming into the college basketball season, he was actually the number one ranked player. And I think Zion was too.
Broke scoring records for a freshman in the ACC. First team All-American. But, I mean, he just didn't dunk. He didn't have that same kind of aura about him.
He wasn't a YouTube sensation like Zion.
And he's not as marketable as Zion, yeah. I think. He, you know, he's not, he doesn't do, I mean, they made that YouTube video of the 67 Zion dunks. Like, who really cares? That's 2 points, right? But yeah, I think the videos of the decimated Knicks fans, it's like you would have had Zion, but, you know, I think RJ Barrett is, although Zion has the name recognition and they're talking about like he could be part of a big three right away, I don't think
that. No, he's still going to be a rookie. He's still got to learn the game and he's got to develop a jump shot, a consistent jump shot.
You can get away with being 6'6" and he's 272 pounds. So you can out-muscle other college players.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're somewhat immature. He's still only 19, but I think he's filled out for the most part. And if he hasn't, I don't see how you play basketball at 300 pounds.
I read somewhere he would be he'd weigh the second most in the NBA right now. The only guy that's bigger than him is that guy in Philly, Bogut. What's his name? The tall guy,
Bogrand or something?
No. Yeah, that's the only guy that weighs more than Zion.
That's nuts.
That's crazy.
Well, so here's the thing. The one thing you probably do see is he was able to out-muscle players at the collegiate level. I don't know if that, you know, necessarily happens at the NBA, but I mean, a testament to what you just said, he is big enough now, right, to come in and compete. And I think that's what people see. And then the inverse is with a guy like RJ Barrett and even, you know, Cam Reddish, who are both on his team in projected lottery picks, that, you know, they aren't as big as
yeah.
So Reddish is 6'9", 205.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to your... I mean,
that's 70 pounds lighter and 3 inches taller than Zion.
Yeah.
Do you want that, though? Do you want a kid that you can develop and put... I mean, there's the right weight to put on, right? Like, you obviously want to be foundationally strong.
Well, I mean, it could go either way. Like, you hope Zion doesn't blow up and go that direction.
Blow out some more Nikes, jeez.
Yeah. But to go back to your RJ Barrett, like, the Knicks are several players away. And if they get RJ Barrett, he's a good, solid player.
But yeah, I think what they're thinking, and probably why a lot of these players or a lot of these fans were not obviously decimated by the fact they didn't get the number one pick, is they haven't had any excitement since Linsanity. Honestly, yeah, well, if you think about it, Dolan, it's just been roll players out. Kevin Knox is okay.
They Porzingis for 1 year, and then he just got hurt.
Yeah, and then but I think what they were hoping for is someone attractive, yeah. Right? Enough. You know, you didn't get the bell of the ball, but you still got the, you know, pretty, you know, strong. You have strong options, is what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just not the attraction of and marketability that you would have with Zion to attract other free agents. For how down the Pac-12 has been, just looking through the kind of mock drafts, I guess you could say, is there's a lot of West Coast players.
I've got a potential of 5 Pac-12 players who could get drafted in the first round.
You've got 5 only?
5. Well, I'll go through them. I'll go through them and let me know if I missed anyone.
Pac-12. Okay, you're saying Pac-12 West Coast, because there are some other players.
Well, so I'm saying 7 West Coast picks in the first round, 5 are from the Pac-12. Okay.
So you're including Clark and
Rui.
Hachimura. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And then outside of that, you got Bol Bol from Oregon, Kevin Porter, USC, KZ Okpala from Stanford, your boy Lugenzit Dort from ASU, and maybe...
I like Lugenzit.
What's his name from UW? Matisse?
Thibault.
Yeah.
Thibault. He went to Eastside Catholic. Now, what's intriguing about Thibault is, like, he is a guy that you could target. And right now they have him, according to ESPN, projected to go to the 76ers, which I think would be a phenomenal fit because none of those guys really play defense. And he would be a fit, you know, for someone like him. His offensive ability doesn't really enamor you in any way, shape, or form, but what he does on the defensive end, where I think, and here's another player that I think, depending on how well he performs at the combine, that's Jalen Noel,
yeah,
out of UW. He was the Pac-12 player of the year.
Is he Garfield?
Jalen's out of he went. I think he did go to Garfield.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. He was Pac-12 player of the year.
I mean, he's playing against Dort every night. He's playing against Bol Bol was out, obviously, the majority of the season, which makes him so intriguing. I think there's an idea of what you did see of him already qualified. I mean, some say he might have been drafted just due to his height in kind of 3-point.
And then you've got there's Chris Wilkes at UCLA. So, like, what is the issue with the Pac-12? They've got the players. Is it the coaches?
It's interesting you say that. Like, you look at we're digressing a bit from this lottery, but I think when you look at the stability of a program, like I've been watching, like, Kyle Smith coming in to the Cougs and seeing what he's doing on the recruiting trail, and you know he has to go out and kind of get fringe prospects and maybe some JC guys and go international in some cases. I think they picked up with. But what I'm getting at is the instability of the coaching plays a big part of it, meaning, like, it's easier to hit the transfer easier than ever for a college athlete, whether it's football or basketball, to transfer. Yeah. so that's the issue is you, and it goes down to like, you have, Jaden McDaniels, I think his name is, out of Federal Way, top 10 recruit easily here in Washington. Mm-hmm. He hasn't made his choice. He's like, I don't want to make a choice because if I do make a choice, sign my LOI, which is binding, and the coach leaves, like, you know, so I think what we're seeing is it trickles down to the recruits who say, I'm not going to sign because I don't. And so to answer your question, yes, it is.
Well, the coach. You brought up a good point. It's because, like, look at Duke, look at Kentucky, look at Carolina, look at Kansas. Like, those coaches aren't going anywhere.
Calipari signed a lifetime deal. They literally said, we will pay you this amount until you literally do not want to coach.
And then you look at the Pac-12, like, Sean Miller might be in jail next week.
Exactly.
Bobby Hurley's probably waiting for the Duke job.
No one wants to coach at UCLA.
No one.
And we found that out. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's absolutely nuts. And then you got
Stanford and Cal. It's been a carousel of coaches. Every couple of years, it's a new coach.
And then, you know, we had that conversation with Jess Blaze about, like, if you went back to school, where would you go? I think what we're also seeing is the mid-majors, like, Mark Few's not leaving Gonzaga.
Nope.
Like, there's more coaches that are saying, nah, I'm good. Like, I can get my team to attorney. I have probably maybe a better, you know, lifestyle, and that I'm not having to fly and travel and I'm home more.
Mm-hmm.
And then three, like, pay scales probably right there with some lower end jobs. I mean, you can go, I think the reason on personal level, a lot of people weren't intrigued by the UCLA job is that the cost of living there is astronomically higher than, say,
Spokane.
Right. Mark Few's, you know, the mayor of Spokane. So I think the Pac-12's demise is based on a lot of those things. Instability of coaching, the idea that kids can go play somewhere else, get the same type of notoriety, and make it to the tournament. In fact, you probably have a better chance of making it to the tournament if you go to somewhere like UNLV. Yeah. You can dominate the conference if you're a top 25 prospect, than going to a Pac-12 school, you know, battling out. And if you go anything less than 10-6 in conference, or, you know, 12-6, you're not making the tourney.
Unless it's the NIT tourney.
Unless it's the CBI. We should get our own college tourney.
We should. WST.
WST, the Western Standard Time. We only do West Coast schools. We're going to expand on this and kind of get into who we believe. Are we going to just do the lottery on the big board?
Yeah, we can.
I think we just do the lottery, right? So that's the first 14 picks. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
So my thing is, I think we're going to see a lot of trades.
Ooh.
On draft day. I think there's a cream of the crop. And honestly, in terms of players, like impact players. And then I think it's a little, not, I wouldn't say diluted.
Drops off quickly.
I believe that after your first three, I'm not going to say who my first three are, you got a lot of similar players.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got amongst those two, you have some very intriguing prospects on paper.
Yeah.
But they're also not really well defined, right?
Yeah. There's potential, but that potential could be a couple years out.
Exactly. And then I also believe, too, looking at the makeup of a lot of these guys and who they have obviously listed here for your mock draft,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of guys that are the same makeup, right? Yeah. So I think you're going to see teams trade up, right? If you didn't put a name over someone, you just said, here's player A, here's player B. I think we would see a lot of similarities between player A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. And there's only a couple guys that are, you know, different, call them Y's and Z's. So I think we'll see teams trade up.
Well, and I think we'll see some teams draft a player where they already have a player in that position so that they can hold on to that to trade later, to your point.
I think we'll see that fits for teams.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap this up. New NBA draft odds. Tanking is out. Mediocre is in. There is no more 76ers the process. We're going to lose for 3 years in a row and get the first round pick.
three straight years. That is out. Mediocrity is in. Listen to me closely, GMs. Fight for the playoffs. If you're not going to make it, be mediocre. You'll get your next Zion Williamson.
There's one time on the way home, I just got a decent sized commission check. I went and spent $100 at five different bodegas.
Wow.
And I won $10.
What about Powerball? Do you play Powerball?
I can't get into Powerball.
Can't get into it.
You know what my buddy did? So have you ever seen those RSA tokens or hard tokens?
Yeah.
So there's a pick six they used to have in Jersey. Uh-huh. And he would, like, on his way home, he'd sit at the bodega for like 5 minutes. And I think it changed cycles every minute.
Yeah.
So it comes up with another digit so that you have to type it in so that's secure. He would play the pick six based on the random numbers that would come up on his hard token.
Wow.
He said he would win at least once a month.
I should have kept my RSA token when I left DMC.
Kyle, you have to check out. No, this is coming with me. I'm going to a bodega right now.
I'll give it back in 20 minutes. Let me go play some more. Do you play? I mean, I don't see you playing.
Randomly we'll buy scratchers. And so for white elephant gifts, I always get my main gift. And then I always put in like four or five scratchers. And everyone loves it because they think they're going to win big. So they always try to trade for my gift.
Absolutely. And you know what the best way to psych them out too is, like,
scratch them off and give them losers.
No.
Congrats, white elephant.
And I'll take that one. It's a winner. No, it's generally like the size of the scratch ticket is direct correlation to the cost of the scratch ticket. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Interesting.
And so your little $1 ones are, you know, they're, you know, just, you know, twice the size of a pack of gum.
Yeah.
So sometimes they come out with like the $2 ones that are just as big as like the $30 ones. It's always good to get those because people are like, wow, those are big, probably big winners.
That's interesting. I never thought of it. All right. Learned a little.
Do you want to change the segment to the scratch ticket? I mean, I can tell you how to win.
Talk about it. Well, this is the NBA lottery, but we're going to talk about other lotteries.
So first thing you have to do is look at, there's always a number at the bottom. So it's the number of scratch tickets or that number of ticket within the pack of, say, 30 or something. You rarely do you want like an early digit. So if they just open the pack, those probably aren't winners, right? Because then what ends up happening is, like I said, if someone wins, people are smart enough that do a lot of scratch tickets. You go to Hoboken, and these people can probably tell you the same thing. Is if there's a big winner on like 001, no one's buying that.
No one.
Right? No one's buying it because there's usually only one winner.
Can you open it up? Can you tell the guy to shuffle the deck at the bodega?
No, if you grease the bodega guy, and you can't grease him while you're buying it, you have to buy like some orange juice and be like, hey,
keep a Sunny D, keep the change, mix up the scratchers.
Keep the change, but then you pull out the big bills and you're like, hey, and you kind of peek over or peer over and you're like, how's that number one doing?
Yeah.
Cause they always have a mark. Like, so you just point 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, where are we at number one? And be like, we're at 12. I'm like, 12 sounds kind of nice. He's like, yeah, I'd get a couple, you know? Oh yeah. Okay. I'll take a couple. And you know, if he was coaching you and this would happen on my bodega, you're probably going to win. Cause there was some investment, right? He probably knew where the good ones are. Like, cause he generally, if you have a good bodega,
take care of you.
Well, there's only one guy or gal at the bodega generally. There's not like 17 different people. They have a 12-hour shift or whatever. Yeah. That's what they do. And then like if and then they want you to win. They want you to come back and keep spending money.
That's how they get you hooked.
Because I think they take a cut of the winnings too.
The store does get it, I believe.
Yeah, the store takes a cut, right? So they want you to win.
Let's buy a bodega.
And just sell scratch tickets. Bodega, scratch tickets, and Sunny D.
What's your retirement plan? We bought a bodega. We cashed in our 401k early and we bought a bodega.
We would have to find the best scratching utensils And then I'm trying to think what else. You'd want something else. Maybe a little bar or like speakeasy in the back.
Yeah. We'd have to sell alcohol, scratchers, and nicotine.
Red Bull. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. And we'd have to make a killer breakfast sandwich.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Taylor ham, egg, and cheese.
Boom.
Was that boom to end, or do you want to keep going? And play the lottery. You can't win if you don't play.
You got to be in it to win it. Boom.